Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 29th of January. This is our show where we'll cover some of the news and topics of the day, and there always seems to be quite a bit of endless news flowing day in and day out in our country, around our world. And as we cover that news, we'll do so from the perspective of our Christian faith, trying to stay away from getting overly slanted one direction or the other, the way that news tends to be in our country. It's what makes us distinctive here at Faith Radio, that we're going to fix our eyes on Jesus and be part of the hope of the kingdom in this journey on which we are all walking together. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Rachel Sutton, who helps produce the show, as well as Paul Perot, whose voice you may hear from time to time on the weather and some of the other news statements of the day. And Paul, we've been talking this week, obviously, that it seems like we're broadcasting live from the Arctic Circle this week. I think we've moved
the
studio.
It's actually going to be warmer up there.
I think it might be too. If we could get a mobile studio and some devices up there to broadcast, we might be better off in an igloo because it's pretty cold this morning.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not too bad yet. It's about 8 below in the Twin Cities with a wind chill of about 27 below. And for people in Hartford hearing that, they'll probably go, you've got to be kidding.
Yeah.
It's only going to get worse because our temperatures are actually over the upper Midwest. Most temperatures are going to fall during the day today. As a matter of fact, wind chills in the Fargo area I saw tonight, probably around 60 below zero.
Yeah, pretty rare when we see the weather actually drop during the day as the sun comes up. And Rachel Sutton, I saw you come in studio this morning from your car. It looked like you had about 47 layers of clothes on here on the way. And your snowmobile suit, three hats, a scarf, earmuffs, the whole works.
So
At 22 years old, have you ever seen weather like this? I mean, it's probably not too much in your psyche in terms of this is pretty unusual.
Yeah, you know, I remember like one morning that was 40 below. But other than that, I don't remember much weather like this, but
well,
it's definitely time to break out the hat.
It really is.
The last time the weather we're going to get today, over the next couple of days, is very much like the winter of 1996. So
that was when I was born.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Paul, this is troubling on every possible level. I know I'm not that old, but apparently I am. Well, I know our first guest this morning, Tommy Binion, has experienced quite a bit of weather in Washington, D.C. these last couple weeks.
Yeah, but that's a lot of hot air.
Well, it's very true. And I have to admit that, and I'm not at all a believer in karma, of course, but I have to admit that I took a little bit of joy when Tommy was snowed in a couple weeks ago. And I'm just wondering now if maybe this is sort of what comes around. What goes around comes around, and it's now back here. So I'll ask Tommy about that next. He's part of the Heritage Foundation out of Washington, D.C., works with the executive branch there. And Tommy and I have a lot to get to because there's a lot of topics coming out of Washington, D.C. So welcome to the show, everybody. This is Faith Radio Mornings, and we will fix our eyes on Jesus together again today.
I'm just a bill, yes, I'm only a bill, and I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to
the Schoolhouse Rock song of I'm Just a Bill. That's a song from my childhood for sure. I'm sure many of you as listeners remember those Saturday mornings in which you waited for the Schoolhouse Rock segment in between cartoons when we just had about five channels on the TV. And, of course, that song means that Tommy Binion from the Heritage Foundation will join us here as he does every Tuesday morning to talk about the events out of Washington, D.C. Good morning, Tommy.
Good morning. My thoughts and prayers are with you guys dealing with the weather that you're dealing with. I listened to that conversation early. I'm scared for you. I mean, that's what you're dealing with.
It's great. And I have if your thoughts and prayers are with us, Tommy, you're a better man than me, because I have to admit, I took a little bit of joy when you were snowed in Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago. And apparently I did not knock hard enough on the false formica in the studio I'm not a superstitious guy, Tommy, but I'm amazed at what came around, what goes around, comes around in this moment.
Yeah. And apparently it got 60 degrees colder as it was going around.
It's
I mean, That's scary.
Yeah, it's pretty unusual that the weather's going to drop throughout the day like this today. So it's a good thing we're getting our work day out of the way early this morning and hunker down and hopefully ride it out. But you've got lots of stuff to ride out in Washington, D.C., of course, day in and day out. And been riding out the government shutdown for an extended period of time. And when we last talked, the partial shutdown was still going on. But there was at least a temporary resolution made over this last weekend for 21 days. Where do we see this going, Tommy? I will admit that I don't see a lot of hope that we're suddenly going to come to a resolution within these 21 days. So what happens after that? Are we talking about a national emergency declared? Are we talking about extending it out? What are you seeing in Washington right now?
Well, I think I said a week ago, 3 days before the shutdown ended, that there was no end in sight. So we'll have to go back and correct the record there. Apparently there was an end just around the horizon. It was a surprise to everybody in Washington. And, you know, the other thing that I wanted to observe is that the way it ended had just about everything to do with President Trump and nobody else. You know, he made his Rose Garden announcement about 1:30 in the afternoon, and the bill had passed both chambers of Congress and been signed into law by 9 o'clock that night. That is warp speed, especially in the Senate, to be able to act that quickly. And it just shows you. This thing really was driven by the president. And so that should color our understanding of what's going to happen over the next 21 days. The deal, it was a continuing resolution, means, you know, we're just going to spend the money that we've been spending up until now. We're not going to do any changes. We just agreed to the status quo for another 21 days. And it sets up a congressional conference committee to try to hammer out a deal. You know, I think that's kind of a weird twist because this has been a project, or it's been driven by the president almost exclusively so far. So it's a little bit weird that it'll be in the hands of 17 members of Congress, both the House and the Senate, to negotiate something. Of course, if they don't come up with something, or if the president doesn't like their deal, he'll face a choice at the end of the 21 days. He could go back into a government shutdown. He could continue to push for the wall without a government shutdown. In other words, do another CR or fund the government and hope to get a wall some other way. Or, of course, he could employ the national emergency strategy that he's been talking about using for some months now.
Well, and Tommy, as the president makes decisions over these past last couple of years, it seems like it's a departure from previous presidents that tend to stay the course in their decision making, and we don't see these sudden shifts that take somebody like you or me by surprise. And I know some of the understanding or the narrative about the sudden shifts that President Trump has made, whether it's foreign policy or domestic policy, some people would suggest it is just sort of this random reactionary kind of decision making, and other people will say that it's very strategic to keep people off balance. Is there a sense in what happened at this that sure seemed like it took people by surprise? That was it a gut move on his part? Was it a strategic? How did you understand this?
You know, I think that he is often accused of not being a long-term planner. He is he focuses on winning the day, and he feels more comfortable fighting, right? And I think that those two things make a lot of sense to me in terms of what happened on Friday. You know, it was 35 days into the government shutdown, and I think he felt like he was losing. I think he felt like public opinion had not fully turned in his direction. He was being blamed for the shutdown, and there was really no resolution in sight. And so I think he wanted to win the day, and he wanted to keep fighting. And so what do we get? We get a three-week CR that allows him to keep fighting. And, you know, I think in his mind, and probably there's some truth to it, walking out into the Rose Garden and saying into that microphone, we have a deal to end the government shutdown, was a big win for him. You know, there were some conservatives that took it hard. But I think for the president, ending the government shutdown and still being able to continue to fight was a win.
See some other news coming out of Washington, D.C. as well. I'm sure you're following it a little bit in terms of Roger Stone, a former advisor who is accused of lying to Congress, was arrested sort of in the early pre-dawn hours. And my understanding, Tommy, on this one is that they had about 29 agents. They had SWAT team there. And also that CNN just happened to be on the scene. And as I read about this, there's a lot of different angles we could look at. But I just thought, did we really need a pre-dawn raid on someone whose wife is deaf, who's no threat. He didn't even have his passport had been expired. It just seems like it was a bit of an overkill. But how did you read the situation?
Of course it was an overkill. It's an intimidation tactic. They're, you know, what they would say is it's for safety reasons. Roger Stone is not a violent criminal. He's accused of a process crime, basically. I think that the point of the SWAT team showing up at your house, you know, at 5 a.m., is to intimidate you. Because, of course, all of the arrests that have to do with the Mueller probe have been not for the process, for the purpose of carrying out justice. We're talking about potential jail sentences that go way north of being appropriate for the crime. The point is to intimidate them to cooperate with the Mueller probe. I'm not sure that I think that's necessarily a noble cause. I think everybody should just tell the truth when they're dealing with the FBI or the DOJ, right? And there shouldn't be these intimidation factors. I'm not sure that what we get is really going to be accurate information if that is the game that we're playing. So it's pretty clear that that's the point of doing this to Roger Stone. And it's pretty clear that he doesn't have anything to say to the Mueller probe. He's going to tell the truth, and that's the, I think that's the part that also bothers me. Is if they're looking for you to give them dirt on the president, and if you don't have any, you still told the truth, but they want you to go further than that. I think that this is a really poor way to go about an investigation.
Yeah, what a novel idea to just simply tell the truth in a situation and that's trusted. But yeah, I think some of our cynicism that maybe we end up with as a country, Tommy, especially related to news outlets from time to time, is that somehow CNN was aware of the pre-dawn raid that should have been obviously kept under wraps and were there. And by way of explanation, they just said, well, we sort of trusted our journalistic gut that something was going to happen this morning. And Tommy, those kind of narratives, I have a hard time believing.
I wish I had a journalistic gut about that. You can predict the future. That's amazing. I think everybody knows what to think about that talking point there. But it is part of what is feeding our distrust of the media. They seem to be complicit with one side in the political debate, and they seem to cooperate with one side of the political debate. There was the issue of Donna Brazile giving the questions away during presidential debates to Hillary Clinton. I think that people following politics have a sense that the media is on the side of the Democrats, and they're very frustrated about it. I think probably the way that President Trump attacks them is inappropriate, but I think that most people understand where that's coming from, and this is the latest example of that.
It's the voice of Tommy Binion from the Heritage Foundation, who joins us every Tuesday to talk about some of the different events coming out of Washington, D.C. And Tommy, we'll take a short break, and when we come back, I want to get into just your thoughts on some ideas of social policy agendas and how there really does seem to be a pretty active war against historical understandings of faith, understandings of humankind. I know there's a very troubling summit and forum that you held at the Heritage Foundation addressing issues of transgenderism, as well as just a general war on Christian orthodoxy that I think I underestimated until some of these things surfaced. And so I want to get your perspective on that next here on Faith Radio Mornings. Did you ever see a scenario in your life in which you would be introduced to Schoolhouse Rock music?
It's been a lifelong dream of mine, and this radio show has made it come true.
You know,
that's how I feel about it.
We are here to make dreams. I mean, we're a little bit of the Disney of Christian radio. We are here to make your dreams come true, Tommy.
every Tuesday morning, I get a big old smile on my face when I hear that song.
I love it. Well, changing the topic to a couple of maybe more difficult subjects. And, Tommy, I admit that in our alarmist-based culture that so often does drive the news cycle, that I think at times I can shift the other direction too far, where maybe I'm not alarmed appropriately. And, boy, you had an interesting panel at the Heritage Foundation here recently that was describing some of the social agenda, that there really is an active social agenda meant to deconstruct both Christian orthodoxy, but even just traditional understandings of gender, these kinds of ideas. I really didn't see this coming. So kind of give us a little sense about what's happening here.
Sure. So the idea of the panel yesterday was for voices from the left, not conservative voices, not voices from any particular church denomination, but voices from a place of liberal thought to come in and sort of challenge the mission of the transgender agenda and point out that there are some concerns about where that movement is going from the left. That there are some costs to some of the assumptions being made by the transgender movement, some huge social costs that are not being talked about. And on the left, they have no voice for this. Politics is extremely balkanized, and dissension is not welcome. And at this point in our history, consensus on one side or the other can form overnight. And that's sort of what happened with the transgender movement, right? It did not feature very heavily in our politics maybe 5 years ago, and then all of a sudden, like a lightning strike, a consensus emerged on the left that this was one of the most important issues and that they held the following things to be true. And there are some people standing up and raising their hand and saying, hold on a minute, there are some costs to this. This is harming our children. This is not about science in the way that psychologists have confirmed this. This is about science in the way that there are two genders. And there are radical feminists even that object to some of the things that the transgender movement has been thinking about. So it was a really interesting happening yesterday. And I think that potentially it sparked a larger conversation about exactly what the thought process is behind the agenda on the left.
Yeah, if people are listening this morning, they want to catch that panel, Tommy. I saw it on YouTube, and again, I can't recommend it enough to get an understanding of what's happening. Is that the best place to look, or are there some other sites maybe to go to catch it? It's about an hour long or so.
Yeah, so it'll be on Heritage's channel on YouTube, but you can get to that probably a little easier from heritage.org.
Yeah, really, again, if you're listening this morning, highly recommend checking out a panel that was held yesterday by the Heritage Foundation that describes some of the social activity and activism in our country. And Tommy, without getting into all the details of that specific panel, it does call to mind that social activism requires a level of dissatisfaction in order to keep its energy and keep its fuel. And people are getting paid a lot of money to be involved in social activism. And of course, at times, there's been a real significant need for that kind of activism in the injustice in our country. But on the other side of it, you mentioned that there's voices coming from the Democratic left that are saying we don't want any part of this, but they need to be shut down because it would compromise the entire activistic movement.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It does require the fuel of sort of there must be a victim or there must be some injustice. But what that requires society to accept, I think, is going to be a tough pill to swallow, and it is a little bit of a long march. Last week there's the bit about exposed Christian schools, and this started with Karen Pence, the Second Lady of the United States, agreeing to teach at a Christian school here in Northern Virginia, and the media decided that it was just abhorrent that this school believed in marriage between one man and one woman. There was a viral hashtag campaign called Expose Christian Schools, as if their beliefs in God and their Christian faith was something to be exposed, some sort of radical way of thinking that they had been keeping a secret for some amount of years. I went to a Christian school. I'm sure that many of our listeners did. Probably one of the greatest blessings of my life. And I think that there are many wonderfully positive things to be exposed about that school. And I don't think that their belief that marriage is between one man and one woman is at all some dirty secret. I think they'd probably proud to have that exposed, so to speak, because that is a deeply held tenet of their faith.
Well, and Tommy, we have just about a minute left here or so, but I'm just always fascinated by this word tolerance, that it extends to many avenues of life, but tolerance does not tend to extend to those that would hold to more traditional Christian views of marriage and gender and these kinds of ideas.
Now, that's the perfect that's the perfect way to express it. We have a diversity of faith in this country, and that's a really beautiful thing. But if we get to a point where we're not tolerant of one another's views, where it's not socially acceptable to have a belief that a faith has held for hundreds or thousands of years, we're in real trouble, and we don't have freedom of religion and freedom of expression like we're guaranteed in the First Amendment. Because there's a mob waiting outside your door to shame you for it.
That's exactly it. That's, you know, in terms of trying to control the thought, that's the troubling piece about all of this. Well, Tommy, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the work that you do out of Washington, D.C. Tuesday mornings has been a significant highlight of my week, not just yours, to chat about this the way we have these last 7 months. I know this won't be the last time I'm on the morning show. I'll substitute from time to time in the months and maybe years ahead. But I sure appreciate all the time and energy you've spent and the conversations we've had.
You bet, and I've enjoyed it too, and good luck to you, and I will talk soon, but also consider that this cold weather might be karma for your decision on leaving. Not for making fun of my snow day, but maybe it's that they're going to freeze you into the radio station.
I love it, Tommy. You're the best. Thanks again for chiming in. Look forward to chatting again soon.
Bye-bye.
Take a break here for some lighten up, continue sort of the lighter theme and some laughter here on this freezing cold morning. Some bottom of the hour news. And when we come back for the second half of this hour, Dr. Rosemary Stein will join us. And we're going to explore the importance of having our kids doing chores. So if you're a family with kids and you've got a snow or a cold day this morning, get them all up and we'll listen together to Dr. Stein's advice. Well, we've been following the legislation from time to time that is introducing bills to allow the public schools to teach the Bible from a historical standpoint within their curriculum. And we see that yesterday, President Trump supported teaching that literacy in public schools. In a tweet, Trump called giving students the option of studying the Bible great, which might be one of the shorter tweets he's ever done. But some states are pushing for elective courses in schools that would teach the Bible in terms of its historical context. Literacy bills have been introduced in six states, including Kentucky, which has passed a law creating a framework for a class. Really interesting to see moving forward what happens with some of these bills that are being introduced. Karen Swallow Pryor joined us yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, and she talked about the future of abortion and pro-life conversations and how we can show our love and kindness for all of life.
Of course, we aren't going to return exactly to the pre-Roe conditions because travel was, you know, was not as easy 50 years ago, and I think now many more people will cross state lines. So even though there might be this fracturing, I think that there's more of an opportunity for us to learn from the other states and follow their examples, and that's why it's important for us as pro-lifers to seize this moment and be the example that is life-affirming and that shows how much we cherish all life, not just unborn life, not just at birth, but from womb to tomb, as we are wont to say, and to be bold and prophetic, but also ministering to the needs and to be positive about life, because it's not just the unborn children who are vulnerable. There are many others out there who are as well.
I find Karen having such an interesting voice in these conversations as she carves out a middle way between the left and the right politically in our country and thinking about these issues of life and feminism and how we can treat those who typically have not had a lot of social power. If you want to catch that entire segment, you can head to myfaithradio.com and look at yesterday's morning show program. Search for that and find all of what Karen had to say. The New Yorker also did a wonderful expose on her life, so I recommend checking that out as well. Well, up next, we'll be joined by Dr. Rosemary Stein, and we're going to be talking about the importance of doing chores with our children. So if your kids are having a cold day this morning, home from school, and most schools are closed, maybe drag them out of bed and give a listen to what Dr. Rosemary Stein has to say.
What are we to do? It's a question I hear often in this politically correct environment. This is Jim Garlow. First and foremost, we can't allow ourselves to be intimidated into doing nothing and saying nothing. The very nature of spiritual warfare is that there is no peaceful coexistence. This means we're responsible to call evil for what it is. We have a moral duty to bear witness to the truth, both the good news and, yeah, the bad news. There's forgiveness and transformation in Christ to all who believe on Him, but there's also a day of wrath to come for all outside of Him. Our confidence is the power of the truth of Christ's Word, so we, the church, simply need His boldness and perseverance to hold it forth, to speak truth in love, to be biblically correct. There's more on being well-versed at jimgarlow.com. We'll do our part, keeping you informed at jimgarlow.com.
For a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, the medicine go down, medicine go down, just a spoonful.
Now, last week, Dr. Stein, we played some music from Mary Poppins Returns, the most recent edition of this. We went back to the old school Mary Poppins for you this morning because you hadn't seen the movie yet. Did you spend any time in this last week going to the theater and checking this out? I mean, there's a lot at stake about this one, Dr. Stein.
Oh, yeah. I hate to say this. No, I didn't. I didn't put it on my priority list. But I promised myself that I have to see the old one before, again, before I see the new one at all. So Hannah and I have a weekend set up for that, but I haven't done it so far. But I have something to report, which is very very funny. So I had these kids that would not take their medicine, absolutely would not, actually had to get shots because they clamped down their mouth and they said no. Well, the next day they came in and they felt better because they finally had gotten their antibiotic. And we sat there for 5 minutes and I played Spoonful of Sugar, and I said, can we start taking our medicine well? And they hugged me, and they said, yes, we will be like those kids in that video and take our medicine from now on.
Wow, so you channeled your inner Mary Poppins, and it had an unbelievable positive effect in this situation.
I don't know. That might be a little bit of exaggeration, but, yeah, I tried the best I could to be a little Mary Poppins.
That's a great story, Dr. Stein. I love it. Well, I know there's lots to get to, and certainly in the Midwest here where a lot of our listeners are, it's pretty cold, and there's a lot of kids off of school today. Most of the schools in Minnesota, for sure, have been shut down, and been suggesting that parents and grandparents get their kids out of bed to listen to a conversation you and I can have about the importance of kids doing their chores. So kind of walk us through this. I know last night when I was making dinner, we were having some chicken and beans and potatoes, and I brought my two youngest, Abby and Simon, to the table with me, 11 and 8 years old, and we all made dinner together. I poured them a special drink, Zevia root beer or something like that, and boy, we just had a great time working through dinner together.
And kids need those. They don't only need them for memories, but they need them for problem solving and working together. So that's really good. There's too little teamwork. But most of the time when I ask parents, so what are your children's chores? I get this blank look first, and then they figure that they're on the line, so they need to give me something as an answer. And they said, well, he throws out the trash, and he fixes it and his room. He makes his bed. And I said, well, that's not a chore. A chore is something that contributes to the home. That's his responsibility, is to make his bed, but that's not necessarily a chore. What's his chore? And I really get very little for an answer at the first time I bring this out, which I think translates to most of our society is not setting chores for their children. I tell them, set a chore for each child, and some of them need to be things that they do together. They need to be age-appropriate, but you need to check on them. So you go back and you look at how your child did the chore, and then you praise them or you tell them, we could do this better in these ways, or you didn't do them at all, and then there's a consequence to that. But we don't have that today, and so we're not building up our kids to have a good work ethic and to realize that they're part of a team. And so that's where the teamwork comes in. We all have our responsibilities, and you guys really have to make sure that we get it all done.
Well, and it seems as though the kids really enjoy it, especially at younger ages. They're not necessarily anti-teamwork. In fact, they seem to thrive in it. I was amazed last night. We were playing music through our little Echo device, and they were trimming the beans and having a great time together to such an extent that they did want to. And you use the word responsibility. My youngest Simon came to me afterwards, and he said, well, why don't each of us take responsibility for one night of dinner where we decide what the menu is going to be, and we help make it. And we've got five kids at home, so that's five nights of dinner we can do, Dr. Stein. But I was just amazed when he was talking about this idea of, I would love to have a night in which I'm responsible for what's for dinner.
I think that is a fabulous idea, because then work is not so much a chore. I mean, even the word chore does not sound like a fun thing. And so the responsibilities at home begin to take on a different light. And who knows, maybe you have a burgeoning chef or somebody who's going to own a restaurant or, you know, be able to prepare meals and menus for somebody. He's going to be the director of Meals on Wheels in a local place. You don't know what you're building, so that when you do these things, you're giving him not only a work ethic, but a way to get through different problems. One day there's not going to be the ingredient for something that he wants to make, and it's like they're stuck. No, you improvise. How do you improvise? And then they figure it out, and that's how you actually build a person. And so I love that idea. That really follow through on starting that one through Peter, because that is fabulous, and your little guy should be commended for coming up with that.
Well, I appreciate you saying that too, because he ended up using the word genre last night related to food categories, and my head just about exploded. I think I had to look that up, Rosemary. I wasn't sure what genre even meant. So Rachel has a question here too, where in studio, where she said, is there a point in high school perhaps where kids have lots of homework to do, maybe a job, that you ease up on some of these chores? Or I know certainly a generation ago, or if you grew up on a farm or in rural country or something, there was just a situation or an understanding where this is part of the rhythm of your life. You don't get out of your chores to do other things in life. It's part of the family rhythm.
Oh, that's a hard one. And for the most part, I tell the parents that life doesn't let up. I mean, you can let up a little bit, especially if your kid's struggling and needs to dedicate a little bit more time to algebra or calculus or whatever. But for the most part, life doesn't let up. And so the training of your child should simulate life. And so I can help you a little bit. I'll get up and help you through this, so it'll take you a little bit less time. Or we'll do it together. I'll take from my time to do my bills, and I'll go to sleep a little bit later would be a better way to manage it, I think, than just saying, oh, okay, I'll just take a couple of chores away. And I know kids who were excellent students who didn't have any responsibilities or chores at home because they had so much of a load at school, and they turned out not to have work ethic and not to get to where it was thought that these kids could get. So we're trading off. If you trade off intellectualism for work ethic, you're going to get just that, an intellectual who doesn't like to work. And so that's not what we want to build for the future. We want to build more. I actually think it's much more important to build a person who works than to build an intellectual. You can read anytime, but to work and to learn how to follow things through, that's a gift that you give to the world for the future.
I think it's well said. One more point on this, Dr. Stein, and that has to do with teamwork that you've referenced a couple of times. And I think about how many stories I know of people my age or now people in their 30s or 20s. Some of their most significant memories from growing up was working alongside of dad or mom in different situations and scenarios. And so to assign chores, or maybe as you said, that's not even the right word, but to not just give them and make them go do them on their own, but to be with them in it, it really creates a sense of teamwork and a bonding that happens in that sort of shared responsibility.
Well, and I would suggest that before you give your kid a chore and just assign it, okay, you can assign these things, but do it the first couple of times with your child so that your child sees you how you do it. But don't be upset if your child doesn't match up to the way that you would do it if you haven't shown him how you do it. And they will take, you know, that logic of this is why I do this, and they'll go like, yeah, and they'll roll their eyes and all that the kids do. You know, okay, it's fine. Go ahead and do it anyway, because your kid will figure out after a while, oh, that does make sense. And then put a couple of the kids together so that the leaders in your group, if you have several kids, like you say you have five, there's a natural born leader in there. That's why there are five of them, because one is meant to be the leader. And it's usually the eldest, but not all the time. But that will take out their leadership skills, and that will also take out the skills of, you know, being submissive and listening to the younger ones, or the ones that don't have those leadership skills yet. And you build a beautiful thing when you have them work together and show you what they did at the end.
I love it, Dr. Stein. I think when I get home here later today, I'm going to put him through sort of a pseudo Navy SEAL training and see who emerges from all of that. That's the voice of Dr. Rosemary Stein. And when we come back from a short break, I'd love to change the topic a bit into some of the conversation in our country around vaccinations. I know this is something that you deal with day in and day out. We've seen a lot of measles outbreaks. We see flu vaccines. And what are the positives and negatives of that for parents who are trying to navigate this difficult conversation? So more to come with Dr. Rosemary Stein next on Faith Radio Mornings.
Practically perfect people never permit sentiment to muddle their thinking.
Is that so? Well, I'll tell you one thing, Mary Poppins. You don't fool me a bit.
Oh, really?
Yes, really. I know exactly how you feel about these children, and if you think I'm going to keep my mouth shut any longer, I...
That will be quite enough of that, thank you.
And, of course, these Mary Poppins clips means that we're talking with Dr. Rosemary Stein, as we often do on Tuesday mornings here on Faith Radio Mornings. And, Dr. Stein, when you and Hannah are actually in the theater seeing the second Mary Poppins, you've got to take a photo and text it over to us here.
Okay, I'll do that.
I love it. Well, I know we're going to chat a bit about vaccinations, too, this morning. It's one of those things, as parents, you so many different angles to this. And, obviously, we've seen a fair bit of effectiveness when it comes to maybe a smallpox vaccine or polio vaccines. But are we over-vaccinating our kids? Are we just sort of doing vaccination for everything? And I can't imagine it's neutral within our biological systems.
You're right that there should be a consideration. It shouldn't be a reflex. And I think that the CDC has it more as a reflex and as a reaction, and then we just do it because it's good. But I think that there should be a more open dialogue to if these vaccines are really needful, all of them. I definitely think that there are a whole grouping. Most of them are very valid. And I got to see vaccines that hadn't existed because I'm that old. to now and see sort of the whole playing field, or the way that diseases are today is completely different from 30 years ago. So we have changed medicine just because of the new vaccines that are out in the last 30 years. On the other hand, I can see a lot of vaccines that are probably not needful anymore. Polio comes to mind, the hepatitis B in infants. To me personally, comes to mind. But when it comes to the MMR, I have a personal story. I was vaccinated against MMR in the 1960s for measles, mumps, rubella for the 1960s, and then I went back to the Dominican Republic to do my medical school. Well, lo and behold, one of the last weeks of medical school, I caught the measles from a little girl that was admitted to the hospital, a small rural hospital. And she had the measles, and I was trying to be a very caring doctor to her, or almost doctor, and I caught it from her. I felt the worst I had ever felt. I went to exams that way, didn't perform very well at all. I wondered if I was going to pass, and I did. But I felt the worst. I felt like my brain was going to explode. I had this horrible-looking rash. I wondered why I had ever gone into medicine, if medicine was going to make me feel this bad. But I had the measles vaccine, and I caught the measles from a child who had a record of having had the measles vaccine as well. So always remember, the vaccines are good, but they're not 100%. So a lot of this hype about, these are only in vaccinated children, I think that we need to look into that again. I do see that 30 out of the 34 in Washington State were not, in Oregon, were not vaccinated. So if that is correct, that is a really high number of children that weren't vaccinated that did get the measles. But just because you got a vaccine doesn't mean that it's 100% effective when there's a pandemic or an epidemic.
And I think as part of that, too, in terms of there's big money involved in vaccinations. And so to get into the narrative a bit and understand more what's going on biologically when a vaccine happens, I mean, it prompts an immune response from what I understand, Dr. Stein. But can over time, if we have too many of these vaccines in our systems, do our systems get compromised in some way?
You know, that is a really good question. Some of the things that we have as older folks that didn't exist so much, sort of like Alzheimer's and some rheumatological things that happen to older people, you really should think about that. Could it be because that's an immune system response to a lot of these vaccinations? And it could be. I don't know that we're going to prove that because to not vaccinate at all would, you know, that might be even more dangerous. But it's a really good question that I think is valid to think about, that some of these vaccines might trigger some sort of immunological response against your own system at the end, because you're making your body have an artificial immunity.
And Dr. Stein, we have just about a minute left or so. What do you suggest for parents in terms of doing research? Is it one size fits all, or can you even think in terms of, boy, this kid seems to have a different constitution versus this child? Or is it really just kind of work through the two-year process of vaccines at a young age? How do you balance some of this stuff?
Well, that is a great question. I tell parents, look, I want you to read about these things, and I'll write the vaccines down and the ones that I recommend and put a little star next to it. And I said, but at the end, the only evidence and information that you should go by is after you read everything, then you pray, and then you come to a decision, and then you should be comfortable. You should feel at peace with that decision that you've made, because you are the steward of your child's life and health.
Well, we certainly love your wisdom and perspective, and Dr. Stein, over these last 7 months, being the host of this show, I can't tell you how much I've appreciated our conversations and move to a substitute role starting next week, but I'm sure that we'll have more conversations in the future. So thanks for all of what you do here.
Thank you. I bid you farewell and Godspeed.
Thanks so much. We'll take a break here, wrap up our first hour of the show, and preview hour two here next for Faith Radio Mornings. But I can talk to Dr. Stein for hours. She just brings such wisdom and experience and sort of an even-handedness to so many of these topics, including the vaccination one that can cause so much trouble. There's certainly mobs all over social media that will go on either side of this. So appreciate her wisdom and perspective. And up next at the top of hour two for Faith Radio Mornings, we'll be joined by Nicole Phillips. And we're going to ask you to call in, too. She joins us to tell us stories about kindness each week. And we're going to want to hear some of your stories as listeners about important moments of kindness in your life. So cue up the phones and get ready for hour two here on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.